Welcome to the Raise Up Mindset Podcast with your hosts, Charlie and Athena Grimm.
Hey guys, welcome to season two of RaiseUpMindset.com. We are here with James Blaine. Hey, and we got Athena Grimm, and then of course I'm Charlie Grimm. So anyways, hey, thanks for joining us.
I am super excited.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the excitement all over your face. It's just like it's there, front and center.
Yeah, and any time to talk on camera, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, shit, we're all hams. So.
Yeah, so, well, James is coming to us as a leader in our industry. He actually co-owns PAX Training, and so he's got some great stuff to share with our listeners around business challenges and all of those
education,
things.
Education, I mean, everything, yeah, the whole entire thing. Safety, I mean, he's a wrapped-up bundle.
Yes, yes. So, James, we're really curious to, like, have you share your story with everybody. So, like, how did you land in this business, and why do you continue to, like, move forward? Like, what are these things that are making you, like, continue, and why do you even like being a business leader?
Give us that 8-minute elevator speech.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll try to give the 8-minute version and not the 80-minute version. Like most people, I did not grow up drawing like little chauffeur hats and buses and stuff on my binders. Like I had no desire to be here. I didn't even know this world existed. So I actually, when I was a kid, I figured out I was good at talking people into stuff, and I ended up working, of all places, in debt collection. And so we would literally be the ones that would call you when you didn't pay your credit card and talk you into paying it. Yeah, literally. And then I went into corporate life doing that, and I managed the Spanish department for a huge team based out of Iowa. Yes, I know I don't look like I speak Spanish. I promise I do. So managed this huge team out there, and I decided, yeah, I'm going to start a business doing this. So my very first business I started with my dad was doing debt collection, and it sucked. It was awful. The best way to make money in that industry is to do it illegally and lie to people and threaten people. And nobody ever gets in trouble for that. And it's all overseas. And it's just, I just figured out it was a horrible business. So I was sitting in the back of my best friend's tailor shop, and I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do for my next business. I'd just gotten out of that business. I'd basically just walked away from it. Didn't sell it. No, nothing. We just closed the doors and called it good. And he looks at me and he goes, "You should be a chauffeur." And I'm like, "You're an idiot. What are you talking about?" He's like, no. "You should be a chauffeur, and you should drive at night, because you'll get all the execs, you'll get all of these business people, you'll get all these people that are going to tell you the idea for your next business." And so I
said, "Oh my gosh, so this was a strategy
that
you deployed?"
This was the strategy, right? Now me probably 45 minutes to get over my buddy being an idiot and come to the terms with, yeah, this is probably not a bad idea, right? And we're talking 10 years ago. So
okay.
I'm still in my 20s. I'm thinking, yeah, I can do this at night. I can go figure something out during the day. And so the next thing he tells me, says, "Hey, the guy that used to have this location down here on the Country Club Plaza before me is a guy named Bruce, and he owns a limo company. You should totally talk to Bruce about doing that." So I said, "All right." I went to go see Bruce. We started talking, and he's like, "There's no way I'm letting you drive one of my cars." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? I am more qualified than anyone that works for you." He's like, "I am starting a training company because my mentor in training, my mentor in that development, passed away. And I always had this idea to take it online, and I've never found the right way to get that launched, to get that deployed, to get that going. You should totally help me do that." So I came in to PAX at that point, right? All that existed was a certification. There was no billing model. There was no nothing. I came in like a business consultant, business type development role. And my thought was, okay, I'll use this to get another business going. And then I'll probably leave and go start another business after this. And so it was two.
Okay, so tell everybody what PAX is.
What
is PAX?
So PAX today is completely different than it was back then, right? Today we work.
So what was it back then?
So back then it was literally just a chauffeur certification. That's it. It was just one 3-hour course that basically taught you how to be a chauffeur. There was the semblance of an online system. There was kind of like a rough website. It was invite only. And when I come onto the scene, we're 2 weeks away from, I want to say it was the 2017 LCT show. And so at that point, I'm like, all right, I got to figure out a billing platform. I got to figure out how we're going to set things up. I'm going to figure out how we're going to do it. And I had come from, when I was in that debt collection side, all of it was medical. So I was used to being around doctors. I was used to continue education credits, all those types of things. So at this point, like I said, Bruce has got, you know, this certification and he wants to build a business out of it. So in 2 weeks, I take the old billing system from my previous debt collection agency that we had written ourselves, completely rework it to manage all the billing for that company. Because I came from medical and I knew how important ongoing education was, again, in 2 weeks, we put together an ongoing training program, came up with billing, and then went to that first show. That's kind of the in a nutshell how I ended up in this business. Now, I'm sure.
What was the first show, James? Was the first show at?
That was Vegas. And it was a wild Vegas because the show was in Mandalay Bay. But I'm coming in 2 weeks before. Mandalay Bay sold out. Delano sold out. So I'm in like the Luxor. I will never forget. The room was covered in dust.
Feeling high roller.
Oh, yeah. No. We're talking like I probably would have been better off at a $35 room in Circus, right? Like I had a beautiful view of the air conditioners.
You know, the Excalibur? What was the one next to
Excalibur?
That's in that same realm.
So it was, but I remember the big thing. It was like, felt like a 3 mile walk to get from the show floor to there. And like a lot of businesses, we had this core idea that was really great. We had people that were interested. But when we would make a sale, it'd be like, hey, it's 24 hours for your account to get set up, everything to get going. Because I'd have to walk back to the room and like manually review and enter in and get everything set up.
Oh, no.
Well, again, 2 weeks to get it all set up and going. But it was at the time, this is like a revolutionary change for the industry because it's an industry that literally at that moment was still training on VHS tapes with cars that hadn't been manufactured in like 10 years. And so
for the record, we were using DVDs back
then. So you were the high tech, like state of the art at the moment, right? Before us, that was like the bleeding edge.
Wasn't that the Monzo?
Tom Mazza.
Tom Mazza.
Yeah. He was the one who started the
story goes, and this is more Bruce's side than mine. When Tommy was still alive and he was doing consulting and training, Bruce actually talked to him about taking it all online. And Tommy didn't want anything to do with it. He didn't want to kind of go that direction. And the only reason that PAX actually exists is when Tommy passes away, a couple years later, Bruce has got to find something new and updated, which is why when I come on the scene, he's got that online course, that certification, because he had to put something in place. And then that ultimately becomes a foundation that we start building on and we use to build out to where PAX is now.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and when Bruce started to tell me his vision, I knew right away getting it online and creating a standard for the ground transportation chauffeur car industry, especially knowing that Tommy had passed away, this was going to be like a big deal. And we wanted to get in on the ground level of just supporting the entire movement.
Yeah. Well, let's even go back further than that. When I was in my 2020 group before Athena joined with me, he pitched us in Arizona. And I was like, what is this guy pitching? Man, we got Tony Monzo, man. We got the DVD. We're still good, you know? You don't know what you don't know. Oh, so yes. He was pitching us. We gave him the respect and everything like because he was a fellow limo owner. He was in the transportation business. So, yeah, I remember him pitching us. And I was thinking, huh, I don't know about this. And then, of course, as we start to get to know a little bit further with both you guys, it definitely came in light that we needed the switch.
Well, and you've brought up a really good point when it comes to leadership. Because when you're the leader of an organization, it's super easy to kind of poo-poo ideas and be like, oh, we got something for that. Oh, we've already got that. Oh, that's taken care of. Oh, that's done. Oh, we've done it like this forever. A big, huge chunk is being able to look at things, right? Because now, you know, PAX has been around for 10 years. We're celebrating our 10th anniversary. Now we're kind of the name. Everybody knows us. Everybody is aware of it. But when we first came out, there was a lot of people that were like, oh, well, we already have X, Y, and Z that we're doing. And you could really tell the forward-thinking people like you guys that are like, okay, well, is there a better way to do this? What's the benefit we're going to get? How's this going to help our organization? And that's always a huge step, especially if you are a business owner and it's bringing something new or you're looking at something new, being able to kind of step outside and see it in that way is a huge deal.
Well, I looked at it like we were not only aligning ourselves with a standard for the industry that was going to better the entire whole group, but it was also bringing us, you know, some automation to the whole training aspect. And I knew that if we were going to scale, that we needed to have this aspect become some sort of automation with like reoccurring training. I mean, we used to, like in the old program, it was a paper test and we had to grade the test by hand and decide if somebody passed the test or not, whereas this is just like an automated machine now. Especially the vision that you had to just take it forward and meet other needs within the industry.
Well, and then take it even further than that, be able to know that our affiliates and other people use the same kind of training, so we kind of know what their platform is right. And what they're doing,
yes.
And they have the basics, or they're a little bit more advanced into it, and then we're kind of working on the same system.
It was really creating some more steps in the path to bringing the industry together in this like place of trust.
Right.
Where historically there's a lot of mistrust or you're not going to do a good job or whatever. And so it's like this bigger picture that PAX represented for the industry was like solidarity.
Well, and I think a huge part of that is that this industry and transportation in general is really unique because you really see a lot of people that don't quite understand the dynamic when it comes to affiliates and it comes to kind of the interconnection. It's funny because even within your own city, you might have three or four different companies that are competition on a contract one day and then sending the overflow to each other the next day to fulfill the
yes.
exact same contract they were trying to get.
Exactly.
And
yes.
One of the big things for us, and this is something that I was really kind of worked on as evolved, is we had this idea early on of PAX Verify. And the idea of PAX Verify was exactly what you guys are talking about. I want to know who's using the platform. I want to know what other companies are on it. I want to know how that's working. You know, and that's kind of evolved over the years into what is now our company directory. And one of the new things that we're seeing a lot of is we're working with larger companies to be able to allow them to share training. So one of the things that we've done that's really unique and that you don't see and you could never really do in DVDs unless you wanted to ship, you know, America Online style, everybody gets a DVD, is we've done partnerships with Lancer Insurance. We've done partnerships with ABC companies. We've got this ability to create this material that can get shared. So for example, if you've got a Van Hool bus, those ABC companies videos come directly from the manufacturer on everything you need to know about that bus. If you're a Lancer customer, all of the training that Lancer wants you to have your team go through is in there. You assign it out just like anything else and have them take a test on it. And so we're constantly trying to expand that interconnection and figure out how that works. Right now, we're in the middle of developing our second generation platform. And a huge part of that is going to be able to allow companies to connect with each other and to be able to share information across courses, across drivers, to make sure that you have that transparency and that you have that ability to work together. Because like I said, even though you might have people that are competition, there's a lot of this industry that really relies on being able to connect and know that, hey, when my passengers, my clients are riding with you in your city, I need to know they're going to think it's the exact same level, exact same standard as when they're riding with me here at home.
So when you are imagining these like bigger visions of where you could take your organization, like where does this come from? Are you just up at night with the hamster wheel going on? Because this is a little obsessive kind of like big picture,
it
like
is.
where are we going?
So originally, you know, I don't know how much the audience knows about EOS, but in EOS, you know, you have the implementers, it's kind of the ground floor, he gets everything done, he builds it all out. And then you've got kind of
the entrepreneur operating system is what that
exactly.
is.
Exactly. And then you've got kind of your visionary that's kind of trying to see the bigger picture. When I first came into the business, I came in as the implementer. I wasn't necessarily the visionary. What's happened over time is Bruce has kind of stepped more towards leader and kind of the day-to-day and the operations of leader. And coming out of COVID, you know, I kind of emerged as the one that was leading the charge and running the day-to-day and running PAX. And so what happened over the course of that time is I found myself shifting from that person that's the implementer to the visionary. Now, don't want to make this personal. I don't want to make this weird, but my thinking place is the shower. And God bless my wife, Casey. She has literally bought me a waterproof notepad. So for me, for me, I'm super all over the place all the time. And so
that dude's running all the hot water out of the shower.
That's why I love hotels, right? I just run it all day.
Yeah.
Gonna have to have a second one put in my house. But the cool thing there is, for me, I love whiteboards. And so I have, you know, obviously in the shower, I'm doodling everywhere. But when I have a chance to go with my team.
I love you want to say that too loud. Yeah. Doodling everywhere in the shower.
Had to go there.
There's that clip. Yeah. There's that clip right there.
And the viral moment he is now.
Yeah.
No, but for example, you can't just have a big shower moment with your old team. So we get whiteboards. And what I tend to do is I try to step as far out of my business as I possibly can. And I have learned that a lot of us tend to focus more on what the actual process is and not where we want to get. So I deal with this all the time. I have people that come to me and they're like, man, I want to talk to you about the accidents I'm having. I want to talk to you about the mistakes I'm seeing. I want to talk about this, about that. And if I go, hey, great, let's talk about your training. They're like, dude, are you listening to a word I'm saying? I don't want to talk about training. I want to talk about the accidents. I want to talk about the stupid. I want to talk about all these things that are happening. They don't necessarily equate that to, if I fix the training, I fix the outcome. And so as a business owner, I've kind of learned in my own business, looking at it, how do I pull back and look at the outcome? One of the things that's coming out in our next generation platform is, when I went to my first show, everybody had 1,000 cars and a $50 million business. And at first, my very first show, right, I was kind of blank. I was like, oh my God, there's no small operators here. Well, no. What it is we're in an industry where people feel the need to have to kind of show, oh, I'm doing amazing. I've got this big fleet. It's all this. It's all that. And so you lose the transparency of, well, no, I have 5 cars and here's the 5 I have. Now, might they have access to all that? Sure. If they called in every affiliate and ran everything in their city, yeah. But there's kind of that big puffery, you know? Hey, I'm this, I'm that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Puff your chest out. You know, I've always joked that there's a couple main rules if you go to a luxury transportation show. One, they're always on time for their passengers and they're late for everything else. And two, they're always going to be dressed to the nines, but the ones that are the more understated ones are typically the ones that keep their money in their business instead of in their personal life, right?
Interesting.
It's one of the things, it took me years to kind of pick that out, but you can kind of start to learn. When we were at our first show, we had a guy come up and his exact words were, I have 70 idiots. How can you fix them? And at this point, I'm like, how do I tackle this? How do I do this? And it was at this moment that I knew I was in business with the right guy, because Bruce goes, well, it's top down. You know that, right? It's top down. Unless we can fix you, we can't fix that. And I was just like, this is going to work. We're going to be great. Because, you know, sometimes you have to be willing to do that. And it really kind of set a tone for us as a business that I don't want everybody. My goal is not to have every single business, every single company in the industry. My goal is to have the top 10%. If you want to run a top level company, if you want to have top level revenue, top level service, top level safety, you want to be in the top 10%. Those are the types of people I want to work with. I don't want to work with the type of people that are like, well, you know, I had him do all the training, but I turned him off because I don't want to spend any money on him each month because we haven't had an accident in so long and it's cheaper for me not to do that, right? I want to work with the people that are saying, hey, I have my guys in there. We are doing everything we can. I want to better the lives of my people, which is going to better the lives of my customers, which is going to give me a better company, which is going to ultimately fulfill me as a business leader. That's who I'm looking for.
Sure. You know, something that you mentioned about deciding this connection point of working on your business instead of in your business, and realizing that, hey, I don't want to talk to you about what problem, like, you do want to understand where your customers' pinch points are, but I want to know where you want to be. Let's focus on where you want to be.
Yep.
And see how we can work the puzzle backwards. Because I know we can relate in our own organization, when we get really clear about where we want to be, stuff just happens. Things show up that we never imagined.
Yeah. No, it's you're not looking for today. You're looking for the next year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. Where are we going to be at that? We're not building the house for today. We're building the house for 5 years from now. Because when you're building your shop and your business, what's today is not going to be good next year if you're building your business right. And doing things. So you always have to look, what's your progression? What are you going to be able to be at the end of this? So at least in how we think. I mean, it's what we need for today is not going to be the same needs as next year.
Absolutely.
I mean, to that point, I see a lot of people that are trying to meet where they're at today, and they can't outgrow where they're at tomorrow as a result of it.
Sure.
So I think that, at least for me, when I got into this, right, and I can only speak to myself, I'm always trying to set the bar higher than I think I can reach. If I feel like I can reach the bar, I don't think it's set high enough. And so I think there's a bit of a balance there, because you don't want that burnout of not celebrating the milestones you get to. But I think part of being a successful entrepreneur is you have to be that type of person that can deal with a level of stress that's going to break most people, that is constantly trying to set that bar higher and higher and climb towards it. And the only way to do that is to be thinking that far out and kind of stepping into that visionary moment.
Well, I think it's hard not to in this industry. I mean, it's so evolving, so changing, so everything all the time. It's 24 hours.
Oh, yeah.
I say that we don't run a transportation company. We run a logistic company that does transportation. I mean, we're logistics officers that just play chess all day long and moving your pieces. And transportation is one of the things that we end up doing in it.
Absolutely.
I couldn't agree more.
Well,
you know, I can't help but thinking some of the finer moments that we've had with you, James, where we got to know you more on a personal basis. And one of them, I think, is when we were in Florida. And
we went to Charlie's.
And said we were getting ready to go there. And you guys were talking about going to go eat somewhere. And we're like, hey, where are you guys going to go? And, you know, and so you were with one of your other coworkers. And you were there. And Bruce wasn't with us. And we were going with, who did we go to dinner with? It was
we went with Sam. Yeah. And I think we went with.
Yeah, Sam. And there was a whole other people, a round of people that we had not hung out a lot with at that time. And so we had a lot of, no, it wasn't Sam, it was Mike. We went to Mike, and there were some guys that brought some fine wine, and we were sitting in that back room, and there were some hilarious moments.
Wasn't it Mike that brought the wine that night that was sitting at the end of
the table?
I think
so.
Was it Mike? Okay, I know it was, anyways, we were sitting there and we were talking, and we talked to you guys into coming. And
I don't know that talked into coming is the correct term. I think
we instructed
you to get in the car, and you came with us, and there was a lot of major players in that one. And, you know, and it was great introducing you to those people, and we kept shoving food down towards your guys into the table and just saying, you're like, oh no, we're going. I'm like, hey, listen, we're paying for the bill. You have to eat this stuff. And your guys were like so full. I mean, it was just, we had so much food that I remember telling Bruce the next week, I'm like, we went to Charlie's. He's like, oh, really? I heard that restaurant's gone. I'm like, yeah. I said, we bought James and one of your other guys, and we're making them pick up the bill. He's like, what? He's like, wait a minute. And we're there. And then I think the most hilarious line was Athena at the end. She said hilarious line. Like, we ate so much food. We ate so much stuff. She's like, and she made this say that it was funny, but she goes,
I was like, okay, the waitress just left. Everybody can unbutton their pants.
And then everybody looked around, and
they're
like,
what did she just say?
And I'm like, oh, follow up, honey, follow up. And everybody's like, what do you mean by that? Like, I'm like, oh, honey, you just can't stop there. You gotta follow up. Like, we've ate too much food or something like this.
Our stomachs are so full.
Like, these other people didn't know us. Like, who's the girl that we brought? Like, what is going
on
here? Who is
that lady? What's she talking about? What's happening next?
We were laughing so hard. I mean, that was so, we laughed. I still talk about that story because it was just so funny. But anyways,
it was a lot of laughter.
One of the good times that we got to meet you and talk to you and get to know you on a more personal basis.
Yes.
I remember coming up and asking for a PAX pin, and you guys had a new employee there. And I'm like, hey, can I get a PAX pin? He's like, oh, sir, you got to join the PAX program. And I'm looking at this guy. I'm like, yeah, I'm Charlie from Bachman. He's like, oh, I'd love to sign you up. And I'm looking at Bruce, and I'm like, Bruce, like, give him a pin right now. Like this. Like,
just give him the pin.
We have like 100, we have like 150 employees on your system, you know? And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. But anyways, I still see the guy at the shows one of these times. And it's just having that personal relationship and then be able to tell our story about you guys. I mean, like, when we go up to your table and somebody's talking about it, we jump in and we talk about it because we tell them how great it is and how it's affected our team. And, you know, and we know a lot of people in the industry too, as fellow industry people as affiliates and things like that too. So it's nice that we can use our connections to be able to help other people through the journey, I would say, you know, just the journey of learning about PACs, especially when there's newer companies that the 3 to 5 to 10 car persons too, they're just as important sometimes as just it is as a person has 100 cars.
Yes.
Because the 100 car guy is a little harder to find than it is 10 car guys, you know, like I said, and those guys we might rely upon a little bit more because the 100 car guy, everybody's calling to get that car. But the 10 guy car, he's one of the last ones down the pipeline sometimes to get it. And it's nice to know that they have the training at the same time as we have the training, and they know the basics, you know, they know what we're expecting.
Well, and
yes, and you are like one visitor who like got to drive my Hellcat.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, you get to come in the last and then help us with our CDL program. I mean,
yes.
This whole Hail Mary, like, hey, can we have you guys write a CDL program for us? Can you help us get us in line? Because at the time, you know, the CDL got switched over from working as a local agency to the state said, hey, we're going to mandate these hours and times. And then we wanted to make sure that we were one of the leading people inside this. So getting with you and your team and
shifting when we need to.
And having you come up and kind of write the program and stay at our lake house and come up and hang out and do all those things. It was there's not a lot of people have gotten to do that on our vendor side, definitely on the other side. But now having that close relationship with you and just having your other partner, Bruce, up here just visiting us for the first time and his wife. And Max, you can't leave out Max. I mean, Max is right there. So it was just it's been this great relationship that we have developed with you guys on a work basis and a personal basis.
Well,
yes,
I think a big part of that, and you've kind of alluded to it, is mentorship. And you know, for me, you mentioned going to Charlie's Steakhouse. You know, for you guys, you know, you were going out that evening. You know, it was probably 1,000 times bigger deal to me than I think you guys might even realize. You know, that was maybe my second show, right? I was still new. I was still green. Didn't really know what I was doing. And that night we had a different Adam who used to work for us. And me and him were standing out front and it was, hey, what are we going to do tonight? And I said, hey, I don't know a ton of people. I'm still pretty new to this. You know, we'll see if we can find something. And I can close my eyes. Like, it was a big enough deal to me because I was so new to the industry. I can close my eyes and be standing there right in front of the Gaylord anytime I want to relive this memory. Because I remember Athena coming out and going, boys, what are you doing? I don't know. We'll probably go to Chipotle or do something like that. Get in the car.
I remember that.
And it was literally I don't remember what it was. I think we got in a van or an SUV and it was get in. And I was like, yes, ma'am, let's go. And that, you know, that for us, at least for me, was the beginning of what I really look at as kind of having both of you guys as mentors and having someone in the industry that knew the industry, that had the connections, that understood everything, you know. And I mean, and that's led to you guys helping me with presentations I've done and kind of, you know, now that I'm coming on about 10 years in the industry myself, I think back to all the times that I've had someone to call and ask for advice or to work with. And so, you know, I still remember, I want to say we were preparing for, and Athena, correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say we were preparing for a session and we were talking about ELDT and you were like, I'd like to be able to CDL drivers. And I was like, I think I could build that for you. And that was it.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
That was it. It was like, all right, Athena wants this. Athena's going to get it. And so I started working.
You're coming to
flying
Alaska.
Me up to Alaska. We're getting vehicles. We're at the lake.
But that's the whole, like, that is the secret sauce of being an entrepreneur, is it's like you may have felt in seasons that we were mentoring you, but in seasons you were mentoring us on this training aspect and these other technology pieces that you and I have kicked around in the past. And so it's like, it's showing up with a willingness to serve.
Yeah.
And if you keep that as your core, then the rest of it is just a fun roller coaster ride of, okay, we're doing this today and it's great.
It does. It does put a different element in the, I don't know if a lot of people in the industry or other industries kind of build those relationships like we do. Like, it's like at the drop web, like Jerry and Maria just left here the other day. You know, they just came up for 4 days just to come up and see our new house and at the new lake house and stuff like that.
Nice.
And then, of course, you know, Bruce calls up and says, hey, we're going to make it to Alaska. This summer, we're coming up for 10 days. You know, can you help me plan my trip? And I said, sure. And then we're going to base out of your house and all this other stuff. 100%. Yeah, come up. But based on those relationships and then, you know, having his son still say, like, the funnest thing he did in the entire ship. They saw whales. They saw all this stuff was jet skiing out in front of our place. So it's just like the different things that people took away from this place and where we're at and then our gem of our state is just like, you know, those are priceless things. Like, I don't know how many other industries have those relationships. Like, they can just call up and say, hey, I'm coming to Alaska and Charlie, will you help me set up this trip? Or I go down to JR's place or go somewhere else. I'm like, hey, we need this help with this stuff. Like, we all kind of really work our ways and our magic to help the other people in it because we're in the customer service area. Right. And so not just our clients are our customers, but our vendors are our customers too, because they're our friends and our customers. We're trying to serve them too in the same way to show them and highlight Alaska. Like how many people will tell, Bruce will tell about Alaska and his trip up to Alaska and do that stuff. And then that sparks interest in all these other people. Yeah.
Spike of visitors next summer. I can see it now.
I can only see it now. You know, Tracy Raymer wants to come up and see up here and bring her kids. And you know, there's just all these people want to come up and see Alaska. And so I get it in spurts, Tony. I mean, everybody is like, you know, we want to come up and see you guys. And that's why we built the house that we did is so we can entertain people and have it up there and do that. So we get as much of a charge off it as other people do too. So having you come up, it was just as awesome. And going to dinner with you and hanging out and doing this stuff. And then having you work with our staff to do the things, working with the churches to get permission to use their parking lots to do our CDL training. I mean, like it took a village to make it all happen.
But James, you get it. It's about staying open and having a heart to serve. And if you can keep that piece about growing your business, like you don't know the connections that are going to be put in front of you. And it just, everything ends up working out.
And we were at the same spot you were. I remember, you know, we're 25 years into BAC now. Yeah. This is our 25th anniversary. And we were those guys at the first show that were going, they're like, who are all these people? And you know, you're nervous to go talk to it. And you got the George Jacobs and you got the high guys that you just like, if I can get 5 minutes with this guy. And then I remember people blocking him off from us, you know, not us trying to steal any of his time and stuff like that and things like that. But you know, Kathy and those guys, but now it's an open book. Like we can call any of those people anytime, just ask some questions. And during COVID, I think that we were all the most transparent we could during the COVID time because everybody was just trying to figure it out. Like, am I going to lose my company? Yeah. Am I going to lose my house? Am I going to lose my employees? What's going to happen? I think everybody was such an open book on trying to help each other that it really opened up a lot of doors for a lot of people. And then, of course, a lot of doors got shut down, too. So,
well, I think COVID was a catalyst for bringing an element of vulnerability to at least our industry that we'd never seen before. What did you see from your perspective?
So from my perspective, it was interesting because when COVID hits, we had just made a massive investment into motor coach training. I had led the charge kind of, you know, at the time, Bruce wasn't doing anything on the larger vehicle side, and I kind of saw the industry moving to buses. So in 2018, we start actively developing, putting together a program for the motor coach side. Through 2019, we're getting video shot. We're putting all the time in. We're actually doing development. We had a massive amount of money wrapped up. And then just because, you know, we're so good at timing sometimes in our careers, we launched motor coach training.
Everything is perfect timing.
Yeah, we launched it in January 2020, right? All the fanfare, everything.
Month before.
Yeah, so March of 2020, we had our first ever chargeback, and they didn't stop. But basically what had happened is we launched this motor coach training, and then the industry collapses overnight. And so Bruce and I sat down, and just the kind of people we are, we said, hey, there's all of these things going on. What can we do to try and help the industry kind of get through? So we came up with this idea. We said, what we're going to do is we're a membership-based organization, and we bill based on how many people you have active in our platform. What if we just said, we're going to make, it doesn't matter how big your account is, we're going to make everybody get charged as if they only had one person on their account, which obviously the bigger your account is, the bigger that discount is. But we're talking a massive, massive drop. So that means you could have your PAX membership completely unaffected, and you were going to pay at the time, it was like $4 a month. So basically overnight we said, hey, we're going to basically tank and nuke our own revenue to try and help everybody. And hopefully we'll get through this. And we did that the first month and it hurt. And the second month it hurt. And the third month we said, hey, we probably can't sustain this. And it doesn't look like it's getting any better. So rather than just ramping it back up, we started calling people and saying, hey, do you actually have anyone still on your roster? Let's help you get anybody that's furloughed, anybody that's laid off your roster. And basically, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, we were doing what was right, even though that meant, again, lowering revenues and basically bringing the money down. But for us, it was about doing what we could to make sure, hey, we don't want you to pay a penny more than you have to right now. And so we did that. We were able to get through. And then through COVID, obviously, just like everybody else, our numbers were really low. So unfortunately, that meant for us losing the staff that we had. You know, we had at that point, we had people that were working on video projects. We had people that were working on training with us. We had employees that were working, you know, as an account manager. And so basically all of that staff disappears overnight. And it's kind of just me and Bruce really back to what it was in like 2017-ish when I come on. And so we've got to kind of figure out how to survive. And frankly, for a while, we had to kind of put packs on a shelf. And I had to go back into tech, and basically working in tech was paying my bills at the time personally, because we were basically just getting enough revenue into PAX to keep it alive. Our thing was, if we can keep the pulse, even if it's faint, if we can keep the pulse there, like everyone else, our plan was when things come flying out, we'll be able to ride it back up. And so for us, we were kind of able to do that. But what happens in this industry, and there's people that don't do this, but I'm talking the greater part of the industry, we're kind of a reactionary industry, right? We love to think that we're on top, right? Athena, you're smiling. This is like Entrepreneur 101. I'm going to get the contract, then I'm going to figure out how to fulfill it.
Yes, it is.
So what happens? People start hiring like crazy, and they're like, here's keys, there's a car, pick this guy up. And so the industry started going up, but we're still, as a business, a little lower. Because it's not till people start seeing problems and service failures and issues and people go, oh, crap.
People hitting stuff.
Yeah.
And sure. Wearing,
oh, crap. Yeah. I stuck.
Whatever they want.
Yeah. I took these guys. I tossed them in a car. And now they're having problems. So for us, we kind of saw probably a 12-month gap between the industry coming back and then people getting to the point where they're like, oh, yeah, we forgot to bring the vendors back and the training back. And so, you know, for us, it really truly wasn't till about 2023, 2024, right? 2023, we started getting back to regular numbers. 2024 is when we started getting, you know, above those regular numbers. Now, there's all kinds of other stuff that comes into play there. We tried everything we could to not have to increase prices, to not have to raise things. But like every other business, you know, you couldn't do it. Inflation, everything.
Yeah.
So there was a lot to kind of surmount. And the biggest thing that I think for me during COVID was I kept seeing ostriches. And what I mean by an ostrich is I kept seeing these business owners, they would shove their head in the sand and go, doom and gloom, I'm going to put my head in the sand till it comes back, and then I'll deal with it when I deal with it. And when COVID ended, the ostriches turned into lambs. They were done. They were there for the slaughter. Because the smart business owners had said, during COVID, I'm going to get ready. And this is something that when I would do webinars, when I would help associations, I would push. I'd say, hey, now is the time that you want to think about training, scaling. When it comes back.
Getting ready.
Yes. When it comes back, there's going to be pent-up demand. How are you going to hit the floor running? And to that point, I had probably about 10% of our 10% of the industry that we deal with, right? So 1% of the industry, I would say, are the ones that really did that. And they're the ones now that are acquiring everybody else. Because they're the ones that were able to come out running, that were able to scale up fast, that were able to gobble up that business, and that were able to get that to the point where they might have needed affiliates in the beginning, but they were able to basically bring almost all of that back in-house, and they weren't the ones waiting for business from someone else.
Sure. I would agree. I mean, there was a lot of pivots in that time.
I think that is probably one of the biggest things we saw, is there was a lot of people that switched and never came back. They either changed business models, they found something new. I think we saw that with drivers. I think we saw that with owners. I think we also saw a lot of people that were what I would call kind of legacy operators that were older, that were at the point where they probably should have exited or
tapped out
or stepped out, that didn't have a choice at that point and had to.
Sure. I don't know what the exact numbers, but do you, James, you remember how many people probably lost in the industry during that time?
I thought it was 30%.
I know want to say it was probably 30%. I think the big thing, and this is something that's really common with our industry, I don't know that we'll ever know the real number, because we are kind of an industry where, you know, I meet companies all the time where they'll say, hey, I have 100 vehicles and I've never heard of them. Right? No one's ever heard of them.
Sure.
Because they're not people that are going to shows. They have their clients that they've dealt with for a long time. They're kind of established, they're built, and they're kind of in their market or in their niche, head down working. So I think the 30% is probably pretty conservative. I think it's probably higher than that. The interesting side effect that I saw, though, is that coming out of COVID, we had a ton of small operators emerge that were more towards the IO side that really kind of exploded numbers. So I think that also skewed it a little bit and makes it hard to kind of pinpoint an exact number on it.
Now you fast forward 5 years later, and where are you guys at now?
Now I think we're in consolidation, right? So I think I think we've gone from, you know, we, for lack of a better way to put it, we had an unwanted culling of the herd, right? Unfortunately, there was a lot of people that just, they couldn't get through. We come out of that. The larger companies that are ready to scale are the ones that are scaling. You've got a lot of new, smaller entrants. Now we're at a point, 5 years after COVID, where I'm seeing acquisitions happen left and right. You've got people selling. You've got people acquiring. You've got people merging. And so we were kind of already heading that direction before COVID. Before COVID hit, we were heading towards consolidation. We were seeing a lot of that. And we're also now seeing, and you guys are a great example, we're seeing a lot of people that have diversified their operations. They're not just a limo company anymore. They're a passenger transportation company. And that might mean, for example, where you guys have gone to medical and bus, or it could be, hey, we've gone more the logistics route. So I know several companies now that are doing Amazon deliveries and that have said, hey, we're not going to focus as much on the passenger side, but the logistical side. But we're getting to a point where the days where you have just a single type of fleet, I think, are numbered. And I think where we're going to still see that is the smaller IOs and people getting off the ground. But almost every larger company in the country right now is diversifying in one way or another. And I think part of that comes from COVID, right? The more diversified you are, the better off you do. Our oil rig guys, COVID was great to those guys because what was before three buses, now they got to send seven buses because of social distancing. So that's one of the few places you saw that they actually did more work, not less. You get your guys that were already kind of diversified into, you know, some last mile delivery or something like that. Guess what? They're doing great. Your ones that were doing medical transportation, people still had to go get dialysis. So a lot of these, I think, are side effects of what's happened. But I think in the vast majority of cases, a lot of this is just exposing how fragile it was before if you weren't diversified, just how at risk you are when something goes horribly wrong.
I think one of the people that we saw in our industry too, and talking about it, and I think we're a little bit smarter about it, is putting ourselves so far in debt. Like that contract, we're going to go out and buy five new buses for a contract that maybe requires three, but we're going to have them just in case because the work will come. And then seeing some of those price tags on those buses at $500,000 to $600,000, you know, just the amount of money that was going out and coming in. And then when that hit, like, oh my word, what are we going to do? And people had put their houses up and parents' houses up. And, you know, they had all these great ideas that was going, and they have never seen a deficit like this, like in a hit like they did before. So again, we felt very, very lucky that we were able to pivot and do the things that we did and be one of the survivors out of it, because we're in Anchorage, Alaska. I mean, it's not like we had another state to jump over and start picking up work from it or something like that. I mean, like, we really relied on our partnerships, partnerships with you, partnerships with the hotels, with medical facilities, all the different things that we're like, listen, we have social distancing, but we have 100 people we need to move. So that's four motor coaches because you're doing every other row. So it was really there. And then we're stepping into that, not fear area, but stepping into courage to knowing that we are going to be okay and getting professional advice. Our doctors that we had that were helping with the medical, with the state of Alaska, how can we partner up with these people? Like, you know, we have that same initial fear. But again, now I'm a fast forwarding 5 years from now, now diversified in several different fields.
Now he's got gold balls.
Yeah, well, they're gold. Maybe old.
Still clank when you walk, right?
Yeah, you know, it's just that.
Well, James,
like off the pendulum on the back of your toe hitch.
There you go.
Well, if we could like put a bow on our listeners, like we have some listeners that are from our industry, but then we just have business leaders who are either moving into the entrepreneurial space or they're already there. And so we talked about so many things. We talked about growing. We talked about visionary. Like, what would be a message that you would really want people to, like, walk away from after watching this podcast?
So
that was, like, would really mean something.
So I'm going to leave you guys with someone else's quote instead of my own. Because when I went and I started this journey with PAX, this is really the guiding quote, right? The money I was going to make, the everything that was going to be there, if I was just looking for the most money I would have made at the moment, I would be a moron to go work at PAX. But Jim Rohn has this beautiful quote, and it's not what you're getting, it's what you're becoming. And that was playing in my head over and over. I kept looking at that, and I said, if I go do the business development for PAX, what am I personally going to become? What is that personally going to allow me to do? Where is that personally going to allow me to grow? And one of the things, and I'm going to borrow this one from you, Athena, that I've learned from you guys in addition to that, is that you have to grow personally to grow your business. And I think all of the biggest gains that I've seen throughout my business career have not been gains in a business. They haven't been gains financially, they haven't been gains in terms of like building a brand or any of the stuff that everyone teaches you that business is about. They've been gains in me personally, and my ability to grow to the next level is what's ultimately taken the business to the next level. And I think
your mindset.
I think the mindset, but I think, you know, you talked about George Jacobs. There's another beautiful Steve Jobs quote I like, where he says that one day he figured out that the people that are running the world aren't smarter or better than him. They're just people, right? And it's at this moment that he goes, I should run the world. I think that's a similar thing. You know, I dealt a lot early on with imposter syndrome and not thinking I was good enough and not thinking I was qualified enough and not thinking I was the right person for it. And then coming out of COVID, you know, Bruce was busy trying to get his ground transportation company back off the ground. So if PAX was going to come back, it was going to be me that did it. And part of the discussion we had there, that's when it became a 50-50 partnership, right? And so it now became, hey, this truly is something that is mine. It's truly there. I have a partner if I need him, but I have to basically be willing to step onto that stage and put on the show and know that I'm the only one that knows the script. When I screw up, unless I tell people I screwed up, as long as I keep the show going, they're probably not going to notice. But a lot of times you feel like everybody sees you screw up. So again, I think the bow on this is don't worry about what you're getting today. Worry about who you're becoming and what you're going to be tomorrow.
That's well said.
Yes, and that can be applied to you as an individual and also as your business. It's almost like I don't focus on what all of our competition is doing. I'm focused in on who we showed up yesterday.
Yeah.
And how can we better that?
And how we show up today. And I one of the biggest things I can just take away from everything we talked about is partnerships. I mean, the partnerships is what I really think drives our company and our things. It's just partnering up with like you guys, partnering up with the city, partnering up with hospitals and different things. How can we partner? How can we show up for you guys? And how can we do the best job? And how can we show up for every one of the vendors that gives us business up here? How can we show them that we're going to put our best foot forward and we're going to represent their company the best way?
And sometimes we have to show up how we need to show up, even though there's bad actors. The bad actors don't get to dictate how we still show up. They can just be who they're being over there, but we're still aligned in our principles.
And I think to piggyback on that, I think one of the things that I've learned is that you can't let anyone else dictate how you're going to feel or act. I can tell you, I have had situations where I've gotten an email or I've gotten a call and I'm just like, great, this ruined my whole day. And I've basically let someone else can trick me into ruining my own day, right? Because I'm the only one that controls that. And so I think for me, at least, I have found that, you know, my hobbies, I've got hockey, I've got golf, I've got my kids. You know, you've got all these things that you have to use to recharge and replenish. Because like you said in the beginning, it's a roller coaster. Just because you're on the way up the hill doesn't mean you're not going to get the crap scared out of you on the way down.
Yes, yes. And sometimes it's not the crap scared out of you. It's the butterflies in the stomach where you're like, woo!
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes the trip up the hill is worse than the ride down.
Yes,
Amen. James, thank you so much for joining us and being on this podcast. We appreciate you. You know that we talk to you on a personal basis all the time, too. And thank you. It's been great. I mean, your first guest is season two, so that's awesome.
Where can people find more about you?
Yeah, tell us about how they want to check
you
out.
So I have the Ground Transportation podcast that I do with Ken Lucci. So if you want to hear more from
Ken Lucci.
You can go, So you can listen to Ken and I there, and that's really easy. It's just groundtransportationpodcast.com. I also...
Oh, say that a little slower. I didn't catch that. One more time.
Groundtransportationpodcast.com.
Oh, good. I didn't think I'd get to hear it. Thank you.
And then you can also find us at paxtraining.com. And then I am basically at all the shows, all the events. So everything from the Bus Industry Safety Council to American Bus Association, United Motor Coach, Chauffeur Driven Local Associations. We try to be as involved as we can. So look for our booth. And I'd love to talk to anybody that wants to talk to me there.
And listen, to go on top of what James is saying, if you have something that has nothing to do with the passenger ground transportation, but you own a trucking company, you have something that you want something there. This is not limited just to passenger carrier. This is not limited to any of that stuff. You guys could do it for your trucking agencies, that your trucker is going to be in there and how he's trained and how he's going to interact with other people. There's other formats. We have found so many different formats for our Limo Anywhere platform that we've used in different things for baggage claim delivery. I mean, so don't think of him as just one and done, that this is just his only flyer. If you got something, reach out to him. He's always willing to try to re-spin the wheel.
Absolutely. A lot of our programs get developed that way. People reach out, people want a program built. And so we end up with a lot of things. We end up in a lot of different industries that way. So absolutely.
I try to see how much I can spin this hamster wheel.
Well, we appreciate you, James.
Yep.
And thank you so much. And we do appreciate PAX. So.
All right.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. All right. Bye.
Bye.